Deuteronomy chapter 6, beginning at verse 4. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children and shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. You may be seated. We have been talking about the Shema for upwards near 5 or 6 weeks now. And we will continue to talk about the Shema and perhaps branching out from it over the next couple of weeks ahead. But we kind of retranslated that, right? Love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, and with all of your muchness. And we recognize that there is nothing that is left out of that. The last couple of evenings at our mini prayer summit, Christina's been talking about this command, or has at least been bringing it into conversational context. And we need to realize that it is a command. You shall love the Lord your God, but it is a command with a promise that is, you shall love the Lord. It is a command that you shall love, but it's a promise that you shall love. It's very similar, if you would, to James chapter 4, verse 8. It says, draw near to God and He will draw near to you. See, there's a reciprocal interaction that takes place between us and God. So if we put forth that we shall love God, God returns by blessing us with an abundance of His love to understand that we actually shall love Him. And so it's kind of this snowball cycling of loving God with our muchness. And so if we draw near to Him, He will indeed draw near to us. And as we continue conversation in this passage, I want to remind us of a Proverbs that we probably have all memorized at some point in time. Proverbs 22:6. Train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. Now, there are some of us in this room right now that are scratching our heads going, where and when is that going to be fulfilled? But I think Deuteronomy 6 is the answer to that. Deuteronomy 6 is the truth of that passage. And I want us to just think briefly on the transition of training in the church. So if we go to Acts chapter 2, verse 46, it says that the early church met daily. Met daily. And they focused on breaking bread together, that is fellowship, specifically the Lord's Supper, but it's fellowship and communion in general. They focused on breaking bread. They focused on prayer, conversation with God. They focused on worship, the celebration, the praise and adoration of God. And they focused on, eventually, yes, I'm just thinking of the passage that I'm in, but yes, service to one another. So you've got breaking of bread, communion, or fellowship. You've got prayer. You've got worship, and there was one other component that's mentioned in Acts chapter 2, verses like 44 through 48. The word, scripture. And at that point in time, we actually recognized that the scripture was the Torah, the Old Testament that we know of, and then it was built upon the apostles' teaching, right? So it was the interpretation of that into what we have is the New Testament, understanding those to be authoritative. So the church gathered every day, and the entire group of people were together. They didn't separate them out. They all sat in a big room together. Now, I first of all, when I think it says every day, I think that groups of people met every day. I don't know that every person met every day, every time, but I think as a whole, they did. I'm just going to do a really quick fast forward because honestly, I don't know the development between, 100 AD and let's call it like the 1800s. I'm sure there's a lot of developmental change in there, Industrial Revolution and all those sorts of things. But we move forward past for us to let's call it the 1800s. And one of the things that we know in American history is that even children educated in the public school system utilized what as one of their primary curricula? The Bible. So the children, at minimum, were still meeting every day over the Word of God. I believe it was probably more common for even people together to be fellowshipping on a regular basis. We move into the 1970s and 80s when I was growing up. And what we find is we've got church on Sunday morning, church on Sunday night, church on Wednesday evening, and then, what's that? Prayer group on a Wednesday evening often. Maybe a youth group that functioned in there, maybe overlapped, maybe an additional Bible study. But we're already seeing how we've shrunk down from looking together in a corporate sense every day to now selectively doing it. There's another transition that took place. And again, I recognize I'm taking a broad brushstroke here. Not everybody fits this mold that I'm casting right now. But we also see a change in that the church seems to become the primary source of discipleship. It's the responsibility of the church to train my children. And another component that we discover is that, again, generally speaking, church attendance becomes the metric for spiritual growth. Anybody in this boat with me? Anybody recall this? We might even still feel it today, but you know, hey, you're like really spiritual if you went every time the church doors were open. You're pretty immature if you only came Sunday morning. So what would the church 30 years ago think of us today? Don't answer that one. But we see a transition, right? And then we come to today and we have church on Sunday morning and we have Pulse Youth on Wednesday evenings and we have a couple Bible studies here and there. And we begin to wonder why kids grow older and abandon church. And I'm not talking about just today in our cultural place. 30 years ago it was happening, and I think that we can probably follow the trend back to the early 1900s to see it beginning to happen. And I don't think there's a silver bullet, per se. I think there's a titanium bullet, and it's Deuteronomy chapter 6. See, the instruction in Deuteronomy chapter 6 is to train up our children. See, we here at OCC have made an intentional push. I'm not saying we have done it well, and I'm not saying that there isn't great room for improvement on it, but we've made an intentional push for families to disciple their families, not make it the church's responsibility to disciple our children. But we see how we've gradually and perhaps not so gradually slacked off on diligently teaching, training up our children. And I'm going to say it's not the church's fault. We want to point a finger and we want to blame the church, but I don't believe it is the church's fault. As we look at this passage in verse 7, you shall teach them diligently to your children. Now, when we come to this, we need to first understand it at the very surface level concept, and that is sons and daughters of parents, right? Your household, those that are growing up in your house. If you have kids in your home, raise your hand right now. Okay, so there's no ifs, ands, or buts. This passage is talking directly to you and I to train up our children. I should have asked the question, how many have grandchildren in their home? But we'll just, because I recognize that's a truth too. But not all of us have children or grandchildren in the home to which we can apply this text. But this word to your children also means children as characteristic. For example, children of injustice. It's a demographic of people, if you would. So as we look at this passage, it is not only that he commands that we shall teach diligently to our biological children at home, our adopted children, our foster kids that are at home, but we are to teach to those demographics that we happen to be in context with. And then if we keep peeling back the onion, what we also find is that your children means people, as in the children of Israel. The larger groups of people. And so, I guess I can ask the question this way. Is there anybody that doesn't have a person around in their life? I know it seems like a silly, stupid question, but no. So the reality is, somewhere in your life, God has placed spiritual children. It is calling you to diligently teach, diligently disciple. So we are all instructed to be a part of this. So question number one this morning is actually a recap from a couple of weeks ago. But I think it's worth pausing. I hear the shuffling around. Two or three of you are getting ready to write, so that's good. Question number one this morning. I'm not going to give them to you all in one shot at the end. We're going to interweave them. Are we ready? Okay. Who are the children God has placed around you to spiritually parent at this moment? Who are the children that God has placed around you, around me, to spiritually parent at this moment in time? If you're stumped at the moment, if you're scratching your head going, I don't know. Heather, stand up for a moment. Let me introduce you to Heather Mastriani. She's our youth pastor. If you can't think of somebody that spiritually needs discipled, that needs a spiritual parent, talk with her, because there are youth that need spiritual parenting. And she can identify youth that come to the youth group that she interacts with, whether it's through Pulse or at Augie's or anything. So if you're sitting here scratching your head going, I can't think of anybody, then talk with Heather. Okay? Most everybody have an answer? I'm hoping. Okay, great. Turn to somebody next to you. Other than your spouse, because you're going to tell your spouse later. Right? Everybody that's married, raise your right hand. I promise. I will converse with my spouse after the sermon is over. Okay. So I want you to turn to somebody other than your spouse, and I want you to share with them who God has laid on your heart that you are to be a spiritual parent of. Do it right now. I'm just giving you like 30, 45 seconds, maybe a minute. That means you might have to physically get up and move. It's okay. Okay, unless you have like this whole list of people that you're spiritually parenting right now, you should be done. And some of you probably do have a long list that you're spiritually parenting right now, and that's okay. I just wanted you to share a couple. Anybody know what that's called? It's called accountability. You've just shared with somebody that you're going to be a spiritual parent to, so that person now has the right to come back to you and say, how are you doing spiritually parenting? Right? It's called accountability. We don't do well with that, so we're going to try to practice it here and there a little bit. Okay. Diligently teach them, or teach them diligently. Do you recall the image that comes about from that Hebrew word? Yeah, see, this is why we're visiting again. To sharpen on a whetstone. To sharpen on a whetstone. So to teach diligently requires an understanding of the process of forming and sharpening the knife blade. It requires us to understand that process. So I want you to hold that in mind. I'm going to invite the kids to come up, because if I don't do this now, then the culmination may not happen in the appropriate process. We have most everybody up here. Haley, come on over. I promise they won't bite. And if they do, you can bite them back. Harder. Okay? We have a guest with us today. Chef Jerry. Did you guys all say hi to Chef Jerry? Oh, that wasn't very good. Come on, guys. All of us together on the count of three. You ready? One, two, three. Hi, Chef Jerry. Excellent. How many of you guys like cookies? Do you ever help? I'm ignoring them back there. But you know what's funny is only about a third of them actually like cookies. So I don't know what that means about the rest of them. How many of you help your mom make cookies? Ah, excellent. How many of you like to eat cake? Not as many. You don't like cake? Bummer for you. I understand that. We've already established something else that can take place for Jonathan. We're going to make a cake this morning, okay? And should we show the picture of what the final product's going to look like? It's going to look like this. Now, Miss Jerry, are you going to act alone or would you like an assistant? Would you like to select an assistant? Okay, excellent. Savannah. Excellent. Now, you guys have to pay attention to me and to Chef Jerry, okay? But if we're going to make a cake, what do we need? You need the ingredients. We also need tools, right? We also need tools. Chef Jerry, do you have tools? Excellent. Do you believe that you have the ingredients? Yes. What do you think is the first thing to do to make a cake? Go by the mix. Check. It's done. So what's the second thing to do? See, now if we were really doing this, there are some people in here that wouldn't go by the mix. They'd make it from scratch. I'm not. So anyways, we're going to go with the mix. We've got the mix. So what's the next thing to do? Box is open. So what do you think? It doesn't matter. What step we're at? What do you think she needs to do next? Savannah. What? The eggs first? We can do that. Are you going to help with the eggs? Did you want to know what the instructions said, or do you have it memorized, Miss Jerry? Excellent. Good. For the rest of you, it calls for three eggs. Preferably those not poisoned by salmonella. That's a great question. It's a disease. It's a bacterial disease that you can ask your dad further about. How's that sound? Does that sound good? How's she doing right now? Excellent. No shells. But that makes the cake, doesn't that make the cake like, it gives it texture. It makes it crunchy. Yeah. Okay, eggs have been added. What else needs to go in there, do you think? Oh, the mix. Should we add the mix next? Okay. We should add the frosting now. Guy after my own heart. I'd say just skip the cake and let's just eat the frosting, but it's too much work to actually make the cake. Does that look good?
Yes, I want it.
Yes, you want some of that? Yes. Okay. Eggs are in, batter's in, the flour or the mix is in. What's next, do you think?
Stir it up.
Well, stir it up? What do you think? I think they are already in it. They're a part of it. So eggs and the mix are, that's all the ingredients that we need?
No.
Oh, no. What else do we need?
Frosting.
You know when the frosting comes out, and it's not now. What else do we need to put in, Haley? Water. Excellent. Should we add the water? Yes. Let's add the water. Nice job. Great question. And what else is left? Do you guys remember what else might be left? Milk? That's a great guess, but no. Oil. Somebody said it. Oil. We have the oil? All right, Savannah, let's add the oil. All of it. Her question every time, that is excellent, is it not?
as a budding chef, do I add all of it or just part of it right now?
Okay. Do you believe we've added all the ingredients?
Yes.
Yes. So what's next?
Stir it up.
All right. Chef Jerry, stir it. Excellent. Does it look good? That's not enough. Oh, you have to stir it more, apparently. Would you please stir it more?
Yes, you have to stir it more and then bake it.
Excellent. Does it look good? Are we done? No. What does she need to do? What's wrong? She's stirring it. Oh, you have to keep stirring it. You mean like you have to keep stirring it?
Yeah.
That takes work. So, excellent answer. I want you to remember that answer in a little bit when we talk about things other than cake. Okay? So they say you need to keep stirring it. According to this, it says you need to stir it for 2 minutes. So I'm wondering if we have anybody with a timer. You have one? Okay. 2 minutes. You ready? Because we want to do this correctly. Ready? Go. Okay. So who thinks that when this is all said and done, they want to eat some cake? After it's cooked. I heard somebody over here say they would rather have the batter than the cake. So that's nasty. I don't know. I'm thinking it could taste pretty good. How are you, Anthony? Do you like cake? Yeah. Do you like it with or without frosting? With frosting on. Do you know when we put the frosting on? No? We put it on after it's cooked and after it's cooled down a little bit. You want it cooked first? Who wants the cake cooked first? Okay.
I don't want it because I'm allergic.
I know. Should I tell you a secret? There is something else special for you because I knew you couldn't eat the cake. But you'll have to wait until they get the cake in order to get your special treat, okay? All right, where are we at time-wise? Oh, well then maybe afterwards we'll have to bring it back in. And can we do that? We can do that. What are we at? See, this is going to make my sermon that much longer now. It's all your guys' fault. It's all the children's. 30 seconds left? 30 seconds left. Ooh, she sped up. She put it into high gear now. We'll make time go faster? Yeah. This was really all about Jerry. This wasn't about the kids at all. So what are we at? 10 seconds left. Countdown. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Yay! Okay. So Chef Jerry, would you like to just take that back into the kitchen? And that means I have to preach for at least 40 minutes, I think. Yes. Well, it depends on the size of the pan. We're going to pretend that. Would you like that so that you can make sure that you get it done? Okay. Excellent. Okay. Go ahead. Okay. Let's sit down. Jeremiah, sit down. So what's one of the things that we learned was if we just put the eggs in there, would that have made the cake? You can't mix frosting before it's cooked. Okay. If it was just eggs, what about if it was just the eggs and the mix? Would that have been the cake?
No.
No. What else did you have to add?
Water.
And then what did you have to do?
Stir it.
Just once, right?
No.
No, you had to stir it continuously. So it's important to have all of the right ingredients, right?
And who said the right amount?
It's important to have the right tools, and it's important to do it continuously to keep it going, right? I don't know what it would be like if you put the eggs and the mix in and then let it go for 3 days on the counter. And then come back and add the oil and go a couple more days and then add the water. Do you think that would work out too well?
No,
probably not. So as we're talking about, now here's the deal. How many of you guys right here, how many of you are parents? That's a really good answer. I am grateful for that answer. But did you know that according to what God says here in the Bible, you can still be spiritual parents because you have friends. There are people in your life that you are called to help raise up in discipleship. Yes, ma'am.
Sometimes I only like the bread of
Sometimes you only like the bread part of the cake. You might have that option, okay? We'll see what Chef Jerry does. Okay, so as we continue to talk about training up children, I want you to keep in mind that you have a role, even though you don't have any children right now, and hopefully not for several years, okay? We're going to do things in correct order, right? Right? Okay, good. All right, so while you're waiting for that treat, you may still go into the back and get a candy.
Yay!
You're just going to have the cake. You're going to wait. Excellent. Did you want to wait right up here, or are you going to go into the back and wait? You're going to wait up here. Wow. Okay. You realize that I have like 40 minutes to finish up because the cake won't be ready till then. Are you sure you want to sit right here the whole time? Until the cake's ready, you want to sit right here? Okay. Oh, there you go. Caleb's got something for you there. Okay. Let's get back to the task at hand. Teaching Jill and... Wow. Excellent. Excellent. Okay, so they're waiting for the cake, and you guys don't know what you're waiting for. They're probably going to eat all the cake, so there's not going to be any left. Deuteronomy chapter 6, the Shema. Love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, with all of your muchness. And then God goes on to say that we are to teach this diligently. And that word picture is a knife going over a whetstone. But here's the thing, to get to the point when you can have a knife that goes over the whetstone, you have to get a knife. Has anybody seen the TV show Forged in Fire? Yes. This past summer while I was on sabbatical, we kind of found it, discovered it, and watched it when we could in our travels. And it's quite fascinating, and I'm going to use the minimal amount that I learned from that show to walk us through this process. These competitors, four of them to start, have to take whatever they are given, or they have to go through and search out through the scraps to create a blank in order to make a knife. Okay? Sometimes they are just given a metal blank. Sometimes they have to go get pieces and melt it and fold it together and make it happen. And so even in our spiritual life, we start with a varying nature of blanks when we are spiritually parenting. We start with a variety of blanks. And sometimes it's solid, and other times it's pieces, and they have to be softened and folded until it becomes one solid blank that can be used. And the type of metal that is used can affect the process moving forward of how they form the blade. Did you hear that? The type of metal blank that is used can determine the process moving forward of how the blade will be formed. Question number two. You're kind of like, how does he get something out of that? Question number two. As a spiritual parent, do I understand the material with which I'm working? As a spiritual parent, do I understand the material with which I'm working? See, these guys and gals, when they go on the show, they don't know. It's kind of like Chopped if you're more of a kitchen type person, right? They don't know what they're going to get. And so sometimes they show up, and you'll always see one or two people who are like, oh, cool, I love working with this metal. I love working with this material. And then you'll inevitably find one person that sits there and goes, I got to figure something out. I'm not used to this. I'm not exactly sure how to do it. And so I got to figure out this process. So as spiritual parents, do we know the material with which we're working? How pure is the material to begin with? See, sometimes they'll heat it to get the impurities out so that they can have a true piece of metal, pure piece of metal. Do I know the history? Do I know that if I'm given different types of metal, how to bring them together? Because we all have different history in our lives. Even when you have two parents that end up having a kid, biologically, you bring a lot of history with you. So now, if you're not talking about our biological children, but we're talking about adopted spiritual parenting, do you know the history? Do you know what's taken place to bring about this metal blank to be formed? Do I know personality? And I'm not saying that you have to go through 3 days of personality training and testing, but do you know how this person responds? Do you know their learning styles? Some of us love sitting here listening to a sermon, a teaching, a presentation for an hour and a half. When it's done at 3 hours, they're going, oh, no, let's sit here and have more. Some of us after 5 minutes are going, when's he done? And we reckon, that's true, that's Jonathan. But here's the deal. If we built a trampoline in the back, not just kids, but I'm assured adults would probably be back there jumping on the trampoline, and then they could go for 3 hours listening to me preach. Right? And there's others that part of the reason we have drawing stuff back there, although it's designed intentionally for the kids, I'm never going to stop an adult from going back there, but some of us think and process and we kind of sketch it out and we draw it. And wouldn't it be awesome someday to have like a potter's wheel up here and somebody able to do that and all that kind of stuff? We might have to expand facility, but we learn differently. And yet what we have tried so hard to do is streamline one way, even within the church. And so do you know the learning style? Do I know with this blank that God's put in front of me to spiritually parent, do I know what brings life and what brings death? Do I know how to take this blank piece of metal? You are tracking that I'm talking about people with blank piece of metal, right? Okay, I just want to bring that together. But do I take this blank piece of metal and can I look at it and go, you know what? If I heat it up too much, I actually destroy the metal. Versus if I heat it and cool it and heat it and cool it and heat it and cool it, I strengthen this metal. Do I know what brings life and what brings death to a person? So as a spiritual parent, do I understand the material with which I'm working? Once they have the metal block, it's time to actually start shaping. And there's a variety of process, right? The nature of the metal, again, determines the approach to shaping the blade. But as the blade is being shaped, there's heat applied. There's friction. There's force that is used in the process. Much like God. Ezekiel chapter 36, God gives this promise. He says, I will take the hearts of stone and I will remove the heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. That involves chiseling. Now I know we're crossing over art, you know, blacksmith versus stonework and stuff like that. But the reality is sometimes there's chiseling involved and God demonstrates throughout scripture, he is an artist. Do we realize that? He is an artist, not just with creation, but he's going to chisel away at us. If we look at 1 Corinthians chapter 3, Paul talks about refining fire to get impurities out. And if you've been around stuff with blacksmithing, you'll see them put the metal in and you'll see certain parts that start to glow before others. Those impurities are burning off. Isaiah chapter 45 and Romans chapter 9 talk about the potter forming the clay. You know, in both of those passages, there's an interesting question posed. Anybody recall what that question is? Is it right for the clay to dictate to the potter what they're to become? Is it right for the vessel to complain about what the potter's hands are doing? And so if I'm a spiritual parent trying to form this blank, I need to listen to the spiritual child, but do I let my spiritual child dictate what they're to be formed into? Or as a spiritual parent, do I take that constituted authority? Do I take that position that I've been given and I work, by the way, we want to clarify, I work in partnership with God because I'm not doing any of it, right? I am just an instrument myself in the process. But am I forming? Am I partnering with God to form? You know, a key component to forming the blade that we kind of skipped over really briefly What is a key component to forming the blade from this blank slate of metal? What? A plan. I have to know what the knife blade will look like before I even begin to touch that blank of metal. So, question number three this morning. Do I understand the final product that I'm invited to co-create with God? Do I understand the final product that I have been invited to co-create with God? Now, in a generic sense, the answer should be yes. And you should immediately run to Matthew chapter 28, verses 18 and 20. Go therefore and make disciples. We know what the final product is in a generic sense. However, have we actually spent time to wrestle through in our hearts, what does that actually look like? And let me say, it's far more than they read the Bible and they pray and they go to church. But do I know, if I don't know what the final product looks like, dare I say I should leave the blank there until I understand the final product? Then we'd never do anything. I need to make sure the blank is ready, right? I can get the blank ready. I can heat it. I can fold it. I can start working with it. There is work to be done beyond until I get a vision. But how many of us have actually sat, including biological parents, not asking for a raise of hands, just posing a sub question to this, but how many of us have actually asked what our child is supposed to look like? I mean, most of us go through and go, man, if they can eat by themselves, if they can clothe themselves, if they can do their laundry, that's a benefit. If they can do some of these things, then man, I've been a successful parent. And what would it look like for us to actually stop and begin to ask God, what is my child supposed to look like? Not just biologically, spiritual children. As I'm journeying with Kelly, God, what is Kelly supposed to look like? What do you want? Because if I begin to understand who God has designed Kelly to be, I can come alongside and help in that shaping process. But if I just go, well, you know, as long as she can read the Bible and pray and, you know, we can fill in a few more blanks. Do I understand the final product I'm invited to co-create with God? And here's a tough part for us this morning. Forging a blade, like teaching diligently, like making a cake, requires continuous work. Continuous work. Sometimes we're in this journey and we're kind of like, Jonathan, I told you already. But see, we do that with discipleship. We do that with spiritual parenting. What do you mean you're not reading the Bible? I told you need to read the Bible. Well, have you ever sat with me to show me how to read the Bible? Have you ever sat with me to help me understand what the Bible is? I told you already, you need to be praying. Have you ever invited me into how you pray? Have you ever, the disciples asked Jesus to teach them to pray. Have you bothered to teach me diligently how to pray? When shaping the blade, I can't just work on it for a moment and expect it to be complete. I can't fold the metal one time and expect it to be blended. I can't hit the metal blank once with a hammer and expect it to be formed. I can't pass it quickly through the fire and expect it to be soft. I can't make one cut and expect it to look like a blade. I can't chisel once on the rock and expect everyone else to see the sculpture. It takes continuous work. And it takes a variety of tools. It's not just one tool.
And this is the point of verse 7, Deuteronomy 6, 7. You shall teach them diligently. There's going to be continuous work to your children. Okay, you go do that. Thank you. And you shall talk of them. Now look, here's the various tools and the various time and the continuous work. And we'll pick this up in another time. But when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise, when you sit in your house, here are the tools, here are the opportunities. If you look at that, it says every moment throughout your day, you're teaching diligently.
So question number 4. Some of you are confused right now. I usually stop at 2 or 3 questions. I just hope you're just coughing into your boot. Number 4. Where have I given up in the process of teaching diligently? Where have I stopped the work short? Because it was too hard. Because my arm was getting tired stirring. The beautiful answer given out of the wisdom of a child. Sometimes you just have to. Why can't I stop after 2 stirs and expect the cake batter to be ready? Because sometimes I just have to. And we have lost that ability, not only in society, but in the church. This antiquated word that we don't like, perseverance. And so we say, I went to church Sunday, so I don't need to do anything else. Oh, I went to church and a Bible study. Woohoo! Teach diligently means that I am continuously doing it. That actually gives the implication that there is never a time that I'm not. I've invited this thought process in the past. Some of us have retired or on the verge of retirement, and in our mindset, we retire from the church as well. Dare I say that once our kids are out of the house, it is probably the most effective time for you to pour into the ministries around you. Focus on your family now while kids are in the home. Grandkids are in the home. You know, nieces and nephews are in the home. But when you start to gray, whether you show it or you hide it, you never have the ability, from a scriptural standpoint, you never have the ability to say, I'm done. There is always, always spiritual children that need spiritual parents. Always. So where have I given up in the process of teaching diligently? And that question kind of goes both directions, right? Where have I given up in the process? Maybe I didn't like what my spiritual parent was saying or doing, and so I stopped. It's a good thing they're brothers, and I don't have any concerns about insurance or anything like that. So what we need right now are 2 of those big plastic balls so the 2 of them could just kind of, and then you'd be entertained by them and still maybe catching a word or 2 that I speak. So some of us have stopped the process as the child. We didn't like what was going on, so we stopped the process. Some of us as parents have stopped the process because we didn't like the results that were coming out. A question that always has to be asked, whether I'm a biological parent or a spiritual parent, a question that always has to be asked, that's going to be a problem. Thank you. Last thing we want is a cup of water going into the electrical sound box. One of the last things that we want.
No, we don't want this.
You're right. It's called sarcasm. Learn it well. It's a spiritual gift. Some of us would dare say, you know that you've been baptized in the Spirit when you can be sarcastic.
teach diligently. Okay, let's get back to the point at hand. Some of us have not liked the product that is coming about in the parenting process and yet never paused to say, if I'm the parent, part of that's my responsibility. We always want to turn and point fingers that it's they didn't do it or they didn't do it or they didn't do it. But if our spiritual and or biological children aren't turning out the way we expected or hoped for them to turn out, we have to first pull the mirror up and look in and say, how have I been forming them? Where have I given up in the process? Jerry, how close are we to being done with the cake? I can keep preaching for a while. Probably 5 minutes. Okay. I would just hate to cut the sermon short because the cake's not done. Okay. If the cake's done, I can stop. It's all about the cake. It's all about the cake. Thank you, Jonathan. It is all about God, not the cake. So we start with varying blanks to make the blade. The metal's prepared so the blade can be formed. We begin forging the blade. And again, through the process of discipleship, sometimes it's going to require pounding. Sometimes it's going to require cuts. Sometimes it's going to require being put in the heat, even for a length of time. And see, part of our journey is going, son, daughter, don't be too quick to jump out of the fire. See, that's been our MO as a church, in general, again. Oh, you're in pain? Let's help ease that pain. Rather than, you're in pain? What is God purifying in the process? What is God doing to work on you right now? We need to be diligent about the process. Then we need to grind the blade down. You need to grind it down. You take the nice big grinding wheel. And you take this blank that's been formed into a blade and you start grinding it down. And when you start grinding it down, what happens? Well, it gets an edge. What happens in the process? There's a lot of heat that is formed. There, what else? Sparks fly. Yeah. What's that? Flaws show up. Yeah. Proverbs 27:17, as iron sharpens iron, so man sharpens man, or one person sharpens another person. And see, some of us give up at this point. We give up both parenting and we give up as children. Because the friction of sharpening is too much. Here's the thing. If we are in relationship, novel idea. I know this probably doesn't happen in your marriages, but a novel idea. If you're in relationship, at some point in time, sparks are going to fly. I know it's crazy to think that. But if you're in a relationship with a person at all, at some point in time, sparks are going to fly. Somebody's going to disappoint you. Somebody is going to use that O word. Somebody is going to offend you. The O word. You can jot that down. The O word. Offend. Some of us need to begin to learn to lean into the grinding as opposed to pulling away from the grinding. Some of us who are being formed and at the same time are responsible for helping to form. See, when sparks tend to fly, our general tendency, except for Jim, because I hear rumors that Jim likes conflict. So does Paul. Excellent.
So as the sparks fly, as we're feeling that ironing, sharpening iron, as we're feeling the grinding effects, as the heat is turned up, a lot of us start to push away because it's uncomfortable. And a lot of us need to begin to learn the process of leaning in because it takes that extra pressure to finally get an edge on the knife. Let's be honest, we get offended at every corner of life. There is always a reason for us to feel offended, to believe that we have been offended. But let me throw out an idea for you. I want you to write this one down. It's not the question, but it's an idea I want you to write down. Do we realize that sometimes what we perceive as offense is God trying to speak to us about ourselves? Perhaps most times. Do we realize that sometimes, or perhaps most times, what we perceive as offense is God trying to speak to us about ourselves? And so when the grinding wheel, when we as a blade get pushed against the grinding wheel and we're seeing the sparks and we're feeling the heat and the pressure is coming on, we want to push away because we've been offended as opposed to leaning in to resolve the offense. To teach diligently, to disciple, means that as a spiritual parent and as a spiritual child, I need to begin to lean into the conflict. I need to lean into the things that are grinding me right now and ask God what he's trying to say and do. Because he is trying to put an edge on me. He's trying to create me into what he wants me to become. And most of the times, the things that God needs to work on us, we are blind to ourselves. And so offense, heat, friction begins to reveal those things in our lives that he's trying to grind down. So, question number five. Before I go there, do we realize something that is in this thread that I haven't had to use a whole lot? I've insinuated about to be a spiritual parent or to be a spiritual child requires relationship. And it requires relationship beyond, well, how are you this Sunday morning? Question number five. Where have I been avoiding the painful work of God grinding me? And I truly believe this. If we will look inside ourselves, the interior life, if we will look inside ourselves, every one of us this morning has a place that God is grinding. Many of us, repeat that question. Okay, I will. Many of us put a mask on to hide the pain of the grinding. But every single one of us, if we will look inside, is being ground down. Question five was, where have I been avoiding the painful work of God grinding me? So I understand that the cake is complete. Cooled enough? No. It will just melt. There were a couple of people that just wanted cake without frosting, too. Somebody just said put it in the freezer or the fridge. You can do that? Are you diligently teaching? Are we diligently teaching? Are we taking the blocks, the pieces, whatever parts of metal that God has given us, and are we working with God to begin to form the blade to be sharpened?
Are we even attentive to that? Are we even aware that God's invited us into this process? Or are we just kind of like, you know what? I just want to live life. The way I've been living it, I'll just keep living it. The really cool thing about the show is that each time they make different blades. And we can talk about spiritual giftings. We can talk about God's workmanship, the way that he's created us. But the reality is that we are not all supposed to be the same blade. And that takes intentionality to walk through the process of determining that blade and helping it to be sharpened. Are we willing to commit to that process? Are we willing to be intentional about journeying in that process? Father, you have called us to be a part of this journey of being sharpened and of sharpening. And Father, this morning, some of us have not been intentional about it. We've not really thought much about what that looks like. And so wherever we are at right now, God, would you just speak to us, inviting us into the process that you have in store? The process within our own life and the process in the life of others. Father, we desire it for your glory. We desire to be sharp blades that are used for your purposes, for the advancement of your kingdom. And so we ask in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.